Under the Scope.
Hey everybody, it is Jared and Shane here for our last The Scope Show review and content for 2017. We promised a big one.
You don't know that. We might see Jumanji.
You
think? We might see Ferdinand.
Okay, well, if we do Ferdinand, we're definitely not reviewing it. But this time around, we are taking on the big guns.
Big one.
The biggest of the year. Not Thor, which is great.
Yep. Not Justice League, which is not as great.
Not as great. We are talking about Star Wars. Episode, what episode is this now?
This is eight.
The Last Jedi.
Correct.
We just got out of the first normal showing.
Right.
Of the day, so this is hot off the press. We are not the actual press, Jared, so we did not get a sneak preview, which is a bummer.
Hook us up.
We're trying. So, yes, indeed. We've got a full car. I don't know who else is going to talk
gonna be,
about this.
They're all going to be quiet.
They're going to be quiet.
They're going to be like little mouses back there.
Or mice, even. You never know. We're going to get into spoiler territory, I'm assuming, Jared.
Yeah, we'll talk about whatever.
So this is the follow-up to J.J. Abrams' 2015 The Force Awakens. It is a direct sequel. Go figure.
Very direct.
It takes place minutes after.
Correct.
Kind of like Rogue One segueing into Episode 4,
A little bit like that, yeah.
Jared, tell us who directed this film and rattle off some of the names.
Well, this is written and directed by Rian Johnson. You probably know him best from Looper. You saw that film with, you know, the people.
Right.
I had their names in there. Like Bruce Willis and
Jordan.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. There we go.
Jordan.
Time travel, sci-fi. So he comes with a little bit of a pedigree. But I think we were a little not quite sure what he would bring to the picture here.
Right. And I will say, just from jump.
From the jump?
It's definitely a mix of his style and established Star Wars style that happened before that. More specifically, like the J.J. Abrams style.
Yes. I think this is a film that definitely progresses the visual language of Star Wars, brings it forward. Where The Force Awakens was a modern film, but very much built on the style of Star Wars that came before, I feel like this one jumps forward a good deal.
Right.
In its visual language and its style.
So before we get into visual language talk, Jared, give us a basic plot overview. I don't think that it's really that surprising what's happening since we're just jumping out of episode seven.
So when we last left our resistance, they had blown up Starkiller Base, but in the process had basically revealed where they are. And so the First Order has made their way to, I think it's Dakar or something like that is the planet, where the Resistance base is, and is basically going to lay waste. So the Resistance is in the process of bugging out. Meanwhile,
back at the bat cave.
Rey has made her way to, is it Achto?
Watch out, crash reported ahead.
Thanks, Waze.
There is a crash.
Waze chiming in on the review.
That's not just the review of the film, by the way.
She's on the island planet where Luke Skywalker has been hiding out for the last who knows how many years after failing utterly to train a new wave of Jedi.
And he's an old sourpuss.
He's a sourpuss. He's very much like not having it. He's kind of shut himself off from the Force because he doesn't realize that Han Solo has been killed. He's basically just living a hermit's existence, staying away from it all, being a sad sack because he failed everyone.
Right.
And so Rey's there, and she wants to know what the hell's going on with this Force thing. You know, she's gone through some stuff, lightsabers and mind powers and whatnot, and she wants a little education, and Luke's not having it.
Right.
Luke is not having it. Yeah, so meanwhile, the Resistance has escaped, but they are in hot pursuit. The First Order can track them through hyperspace, and so they're basically, we've got this kind of slow-motion chase sequence for the bulk of the film where the Resistance is trying to basically stay just out of range of the First Order's big guns while somehow formulating a plan to survive.
Yep. And that plan is sort of like, if you're thinking about like the A, B, C plot points of this film, that is definitely the C point where we meet new character Rose, who is a lowly mechanic, and she teams up with Finn to go on some cockamamie.
They gotta get a guy to do a thing.
They
to
know
shut,
a guy
to shut down the thing.
Yeah.
To save the day.
Basically. And apparently, if they do shut it down, they are going to sacrifice themselves because there's no way they're going to get back to that resistance ship.
There's 6 minutes. There's an overwhelming theme of sacrifice.
Right.
And what is heroism? And what is leadership? In this film.
I don't know if they actually even thought about that, but that was the first thing that popped into my head. Like, oh, you guys are dead meat if you're over there, but hey.
I think so. I think if you start poking holes in the timelines a little bit...
Things get a little dicey, right?
I mean, they specifically said at one point that they had about 18 hours of fuel or whatever for the resistance ship, but somehow time must go slower on Achito. Because Ray's clearly there for several days, if not, like, a longer
maybe
period
it,
of time.
But
so.
Maybe it, the but maybe the world spins quickly.
Maybe,
Jared.
But it's happening in parallel, so whatever. Yeah. It's Star Wars, timey-wimey-ness. You can get to planets without hyperspace if you need to for the story's sake. So
yeah, if you,
let's not dwell on that too much.
To be fair, there are other things you could poke holes in this film if you really want to get into the weeds, if we will.
Right. So eventually, Ray decides that she's had enough of Luke and his sad sackiness, and she's going to go off and try to... I forgot. Meanwhile, she's been having, like, these force conversations with Kylo Ren.
Right.
Like, somehow they can see each other and have conversations. I think it's revealed later on that it's actually maybe...
Snoke is
enabling this stuff. But basically, she's fed up with Luke saying, I'm not going to help, blah, blah, blah. She's going to go off and save the day herself. Yeah.
So eventually you have paths intersecting between Rey and Ren.
Yep.
You've got paths intersecting between Luke and Leia. You have this overwhelming theme of forget the old.
Yes, move on.
And I think that is, in a way, that's sort of directed at...
The audience
like us, because it's going to move on without you. Which is sort of a bittersweet theme through it, which I don't always think is successful. But, so there we go. Eventually, what happens, Jared?
They end up on the crate, the mineral world, which is featured heavily in the trailers with the red and the white and the big walkers and the flying speeder things. And there's a big battle there. Crystal foxes, crystal critters, whatever you want to call them. They have a name. I don't remember what it is. I'm sure the merchandise will tell me.
Right. And by far, probably the most visually impressive.
Yes.
Set piece of the movie.
Then we forgot to mention porgs. There are porgs.
Yeah, a lot of porgs. So we've seen it. We've got opinions.
We do.
What say you, sir?
You know, I think, I like about 75% of this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And in the stuff that I didn't really click with me, it's not like I hate it. It's certainly not like prequel level stuff, but I think like the opening stuff is great. The closing stuff is great. I think there's some issues in the middle where
let's go.
I get what they're going for, but maybe it's not quite connected with me. Specifically, the sort of this, as you call it, the C plot, where they have to go off to the Las Vegas planet,
right? Canto Bight.
Canto Bight.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It was.
It was a little campy.
I hate to say it. It was campy.
Yeah.
It was pointless. Nothing was accomplished from that other than they got screwed over. They were tricked.
Well, I think there's a larger play there because we actually go back there at the very end of the film and we see that the sparks of the rebellion have kind of been reignited. And I think there's...
Too much plot for that payoff. That's what I say.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think that it was a complete waste of time.
And it sort of delved into the cardinal sin of George Lucas and the prequels, which was let's feature giant animatronic/CGI animals.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it doesn't work. It doesn't work, and it felt sort of silly. It did.
But The Force Awakens had its Rathar scene, too. So.
Yep, and the Rathar scene we talked about in our review was the weakest part of that movie. And just the strengths of everything else sort of overcame that. In this film, I think anything with Ren and Rey was gold.
Absolutely.
It was what you wanted to see.
You had gravitas, anytime you're dealing with the Force, that is...
Some of that stuff moved ahead pretty quickly, kind of their relationship, but, I mean, that's what happened in The Force Awakens, too. It didn't have quite as much time to percolate. The stuff with Luke was great, although he was a little sullen, wasn't he?
He was a sullen, but I'm kind of... in favor of this take on the character. I mean, I think it would have been too easy to just go like, oh, Luke's, you know, decides that he's got to come back and he's gonna be more successful this time and he's gonna save the day. And I think the way they dealt with him, and they really, like, you know, he's really kind of got this PTSD from this situation that just completely crashed and burned. And he doesn't want to be part of the world anymore. And he sort of comes back for one last hurrah, but he doesn't come back directly. He still stays in isolation, which was, I thought, a really interesting take. By the way, if you're paying attention, you can kind of figure out that maybe something's not quite right when he comes back, because somehow he has his original lightsaber, which we had just seen destroyed.
I was wondering about that as well.
Yep. Something's not right about this. And then he had time to get a haircut.
Yes. And he's very flexible.
So...
yeah, I mean, that stuff was great. I think that setting Poe Dameron up as the de facto leader of the rebellion, sort of...
I wonder how much of that was the original intent and how much of that was sort of a necessity given the fact that Carrie Fisher is no longer with us.
I feel like that was intentional.
Could be.
Because, you know, as we go back to that plot, the plot point of... forget the old.
Yeah.
Look to the new.
Yeah. These characters, we're saying goodbye to these old characters and we're embracing these new characters and their journey. And so, you're probably right. That is intentional.
The only characters by the end of this trilogy that we will see will be the droids and the non-humans.
Pretty much.
Anybody else will not be around, by necessity, but, you know, maybe you have a... Force ghosty type of Luke Skywalker at some point.
But even C-3PO and R2-D2 have taken a back seat
to
BB-8.
They're just not.
And his new set of superpowers.
Yeah. And it's sort of sad that's the way it goes.
But you got to move forward.
But that's the way
You can always go back and revisit the old films. Right. You can't live with these characters forever.
Let's get into one more set of weaknesses before we go back to the positives. I'm not a huge fan of the Finn character. I felt that we talked about this for The Force Awakens. We're going to say the same things. He doesn't quite seem to have a place and a tone that fits where he came from.
I thought maybe he had a moment. Like, I thought, like, when he goes on a suicide run, I thought if he completes this, it's going to be sad to lose that character.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's a satisfying arc for him.
Right.
To be able to strike back at the First Order would be nice. But, yeah, again, he's sort of sidelined with this whole Canto Bight side plot. And, I don't know, it just isn't as rewarding as I would hope for. Maybe he gets some grade-A screen time in storyline in the third one.
Yeah. And
we'll have to see.
And my problem with him is that I feel like they give him too much of that Han Solo cockiness when I just don't understand where it comes from. I don't understand, given he was, like, trained to be this stormtrooper. Like, you would think he would be kind of like a dark, daredevil-y type character rather than this happy-go-lucky guy.
And not that much time has passed for his character to sort of find that through line, so...
Yeah, I don't get it, and I'll just go out and say, of the new characters, he's the weakest. And then we have to talk about, again, you have this interesting, visually awesome Captain Phasma, and Phasma has really no more moments in this film than she did in the first one.
No, but you just can tell that she's going to show up in the third one. That's going to be her thing. She has a couple of little moments, and then you think she's dead, and then she shows up again.
I just don't, I guess maybe the intention is that Phasma's going to be like this Spectre character, and you're not really going to find out what's going on.
Right.
Although maybe they hinted that they would a little bit.
Maybe.
Towards,
I think Snoke's going to be the same way, because, spoiler alert, Snoke's no longer with us.
Yeah, which I think is the biggest shock of the film.
Yeah.
By far.
I was kind of really looking forward to seeing more about him and where he came from. But then I was thinking about this on the way out. I'm like, we didn't really know that much about the Emperor. And he was sufficient in what he was, and all of the backstory we got from the prequel movies that came later, and all of the follow-on books and comics and everything else that filled out the character, and maybe we're just going to have to rely on that.
And guess what? In the stuff that I've read, they filled him out, but still it was dancing around him.
The
not
Snoke
really,
stuff?
Yeah, not really giving you specifics. And maybe Snoke comes back as a Force ghost, Jared.
It's possible. I don't know. It's very... Yeah.
It's hard to say.
It feels like he's such an influential force, not to use the word... I guess I do need to use that word.
You just did it.
He was the force in the force for Kylo Ren and how he broke bad, and then maybe broke good, and then broke bad again. And it feels like he's gotten kind of short shrift in the explanation department.
Right. And along with that, I mean, we may have learned about Ray's parents, but I don't necessarily buy it.
It could be a red herring. It could be just something for the audience to go, oh, okay, she's not a Skywalker, she's not a Kenobi.
She's a nobody. Right.
Which I'm fine with, by the way. I'm on the record for being like, that's great. She doesn't need to be tied to one of the big families. She could just be a nobody.
Right.
It's perfect in my mind. As long as she's not a virgin of birth.
That's probably not.
No midichlorians.
None to be seen.
All right, we're done harping on the things we don't like. What did we like?
Lightsaber, the main lightsaber duel was fantastic.
Yes.
The double fight. If you guys want to take off, we can.
Duh.
All right.
All right.
We've got that.
I was finding my keys.
The opening.
I think the bookend battle scenes both were pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Both the slow motion, the slow bombing run, which was very much like, very much
like a
World War II type thing, which is obviously what the inspiration of the first dogfight scene was about too.
Yep.
So that's a callback to that. And then the end scene, I really visually stunning. I think we maybe didn't get enough of the walkers.
Yeah.
I kind of hope that we would see more. Like, I feel like we got the hard sell on these things, and then they were just sort of there.
Yeah, I wasn't as, I mean, visually like the dust, but especially when they would close in on the ships, you know, the cockpits open.
Yeah.
And it looked a little cheesy. But
I don't know. I kind of like that. I think that's part of this new visual language where they're pushing it forward. And, like, you got some of that in the space scene in the early part where it's like, we're right in by these cockpits.
You go
like
into it.
It's pretty amazing, like, what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a new style. It's different than what we're used to seeing. I think we're not used to seeing these sort of cockpit shots, but kind of pulled back. We're used to the cheating where it's like, you get the exterior model,
and you get the real close-up.
Yeah. Now they're really sort of being—they're able to pull back and integrate that completely. So
yeah, well, maybe
the design of the ski speeders isn't the best. Like it, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't want to look for things to not like about this movie. I want to focus on the things I really liked.
What else, Jared? There. So we've got the bookend fights. I think anything to do with Luke Skywalker and that training stuff was fascinating and stuff you want to see.
I am fascinated with this take on the character and just being just utterly defeated and shut off and then coming back for one last hurrah.
Right.
They'll sort of reveal that he's not even on the planet when he's doing like this force projection of himself onto the battlefield. Which I kind of figured it was something like that, but I figured he was at least on the planet.
Right.
Like up on the mountain or something, and he's not even there. So it's like, whoa.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Dude's got some power. We got Yoda who came back.
Right.
And I don't know if they broke out the puppet or if they just have perfected the digital puppet.
It looked very puppetish.
It looked like a puppet.
Yeah, maybe with some digital enhancements.
Which I'm sure absolutely was the intent, and I think it looked fine.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. And he was a little wisecracker.
He was, yeah. The thing about these Star Wars films is they sort of inject modern comedic colloquialisms into it.
Yeah,
you
like
know what
kick
I mean?
Ass and yeah, so there's crystal some, critters.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's some stuff there that makes it feel more modern, for better or for worse.
And they did that in The Force Awakens, too. Yep. It was definitely a choice to sort of use modern language and not feel so stilted and classical, like the other films were.
Yeah, where it just had stilted language. yes, I mean, special effects, generally speaking, were pretty much on point.
I'm blown away by some of the visuals. It's like, again, it's Star Wars. It feels like Star Wars. All the art direction feels like Star Wars, but there's something about it, like just the way things were framed and lit and the way the camera moved. I'm thinking of some of the acrobatic X-Wing stuff in the opening scene. Just feels very, very modern, and I am in favor of it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very kinetic and very entertaining.
Well, and I think for me, in terms of beyond the lightsaber duel, which I think was by far the two lightsaber duels, the most interesting and visually impressive, was just how, you know, those speeders buzzing along that white planet, kicking up the red dust.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was about as artistic of a concept as you've ever seen in Star Wars.
That was just really pure impressive. Visuals. Yeah.
Even if we didn't like the ship design as much, just what they did with it was really impressive.
Yeah.
Really impressive.
Agreed.
So we've covered it all, Jared. We've said a lot, but we have not given it a score.
The Soap score is 3.5 stars.
So 3.5, and it's probably 3.5 Star Wars stars, Jared, because
Star Wars gets a little bump no matter what.
It just gets a bump. You know, maybe if it's a different film, we might be a little more critical, but it's Star Wars, and that's just the way it is. That's how we do it on this show.
I mean, for the things that we didn't quite connect with in there, I enjoyed the experience so much, and I didn't feel like it dragged. In fact, it's like...
Except for the Canto Bite stuff. You have to admit that that was... You know, they're trying to sort of mix in like a Lando Calrissian...
Yeah, a little bit.
...cantina type of scene thing. Let's do something a little different, but something familiar. But it didn't... You know, it was a black and white and gold planet.
Yeah.
It didn't work. I'm telling you, it didn't work.
No.
And you agree with me.
And then
me.
The art direction didn't gel with me. The costume design didn't work for me. That whole part needs to be reworked. Sorry, Ryan Johnson. Yeah. I know you're listening. But everything else, fantastic.
On point.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh, so talking about the length, this is the longest Star Wars film we've had. It's at, you know, 2.5 hours. And you get, like, farther along, and you kind of, at some point, you go, oh, wait a minute. We haven't seen the whole red and white salt planet yet.
Right.
We haven't even gotten there yet. Yep. It's like, there's a whole nother thing coming. Because it feels like it's almost kind of getting ready to wrap up, but then there's like a whole other act to go, which I was excited for. I was excited that I still got that, got to watch more of it.
And one last comment before we wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you compare this to the original trilogy, the second film, Jedi or Empire, ended with a pretty big cliffhanger.
Yes.
This movie did not really end with a cliffhanger. It sort of,
it
ended with a... Okay, we sort of completed the story arc, but there's not a lot of stuff left open that you're like, jaw drop.
Yeah, I don't think you feel like, whereas Empire ended, you're like, whoa, all right, how are we going to wrap this up? What's going on? What's next? This is feels like, I'm excited, what's next? But I have no idea what's next.
I honestly, and I don't know if, Angela, if you thought this, but when we were watching that film, I thought that it was going to end as Luke walked out of that hangar to confront Kylo Ren. Like, I thought that's where the cut was going to be.
Maybe.
And then people are going to be like, oh my God, we got to wait 2 years to see what happens in this fight. But no, they didn't. They pushed forward and concluded the story.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it's like we feel like, I mean, obviously there's more to Rey and Kylo Ren to come. There's Poe Dameron as obviously progressing in his character. But, you know,
you feel like
Leia's maybe passed the torch. Luke is obviously... like, literally gone non-corporeal.
We don't know what's going to happen with Leia. That one, I don't know what they're going to do with it.
I mean, the word was that she was going to, her character was going to...
have a huge arc in the third one.
And that's obviously not going to happen, so...
And I think I'm just going to have to accept that I'm probably not going to like the Finn character. That's how it's going to be. I'm just not a huge fan. And the one other thing, Jared, we didn't talk about, I know now we're complaining again, but but Princess Leia sucked out into space, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Kind of lame to me.
Yeah, didn't like it?
I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
It was, I think...
I didn't like it.
No.
They didn't need to do that.
I don't think you needed to do it either. And I think, well, maybe...
Yeah, like,
I could justify it is if she was still around and she was going to get this arc in the third movie. But I feel like you could have not... I don't know.
Yeah, like when it happened.
Like, I feel like it was setting up, like, what she might do in the next film. But she's not going to be there, right. So it's like... don't do this.
Like, I think it would have been ballsier to... I mean, obviously that wasn't in the plot because the movie was filmed and they didn't know she was going to... Carrie Fisher was going to... But they could have killed her right there and then that could have been like, whoa, that's how we're going to deal with it. I mean, that's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah,
they teased it, but then yet she uses some sort of special force power to suck herself. I mean, I know she has the force, but boy... I think what it's trying to show is she's super powerful. She just chooses not to use it.
Right.
Except when she has to, but...
I mean,
she's in space, Angela.
I know.
Sitting out there and unconscious, but yet she—I don't know. I mean, that one is even probably the biggest issue for me. Beyond Canto Blight.
Canto Blight.
Whatever.
It's perfect.
I mean, that one was a rough one for me.
The thing I'm going to go with is like we've had 30 years between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. She's had to have hung out with Luke and gotten a little training or worked on something in secret. So she's at least developed some of these skills.
You are such a vacuum of space apologist. It's ridiculous.
That is, if I want that on my tombstone.
There we go. Vacuum of space. Jared, tell people how they can interact with the Scope Show for the remainder of 2017 and looking into the future that is 2018. Go.
Make sure you write to us at comments at thescopeshow.com or call the voicemail line at 612-21-SCOPE. That is 612-217-2673. I think I got it right. Well, no. Who knows? We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Those links are at the website, thescopeshow.com.
That's it.
That is it.
Well, Jared, thanks for a great year.
You're welcome.
We've got
this will probably be out before our final episode. Make sure you tune in for that.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a winner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's wrap this up. If we have our secret movies coming for the rest of the year, we'll get them out, but let's pretend like we won't.
All right.
So, until 2018, for Jared, I am Shane. Adam is somewhere out there in the vacuum of space, holding his breath till he can be sucked back into the Scope studio. We'll see you later. Bye for now. We'll be right back.